All right, thanks for joining us today. So I'm Mark Hobick, I'm the president of Variety Business Intelligence. And
I'm Carolyn Finger, I am the senior vice president of research.
So today what we're gonna do is we're gonna introduce you to VBI's data set, our entertainment metadata, and we're also gonna talk about some really interesting use cases from a number of our clients, Netflix, Disney, Warner Media, and others. Spoiler alert, there aren't going to be any major spoilers. There are no state secrets here, of course. Our clients' privacy is important to us as well. But we're going to be talking about what's been publicly announced and what those use cases are, and I think you'll find it very interesting. Again, if you have any questions, by the way, this is a relatively small group. It's a small room. So if you do have a question, feel free to raise your hand, and we'll be happy to answer that then. We're also going to do questions and answers at the end. So feel free at any time. So first of all, a little background on Variety Business Intelligence. VBI is the data licensing and business solutions arm of Variety Media. Our primary business is data licensing, and we do that via our APIs, and we also do that through secure file delivery. In addition to that, we have three primary business solution products. That's Variety Insight, which I'm going to talk about in just a second, VScore, which is a familiarity and appeal metric measuring about 30,000 actors working in entertainment, and Variety Archives. In terms of Variety Insight is a research application, is really the leading research application tracking people, projects, and companies across TV, film, and digital entertainment. The application is designed for desktop and mobile. We do have an app. We've been around since 1999. And this product really is designed for those clients that aren't at a point where they're ready to license data and pull data into their own system. So Variety Insight allows clients to essentially benefit from the insights of our data very quickly and easily. What makes us a leader in the entertainment metadata licensing space is really our scope and quality. These are just a few of the kind of bullet points I want to call out to you. We have over 4.2 million credits in our system. We're 1.3 million people that we're tracking, 75,000 employee listings, 90 plus years of historical film, TV, and streaming series. We have 32,000 company profiles, and we're doing this comprehensively across 7 territories around the world. In terms of our clients, we serve about 750 companies in the media and entertainment space. You're seeing a few of those companies here. We're also the leader in terms of licensing data to streaming services like Netflix, Lionsgate, and other streamers. That's a real feather in our cap because it illustrates the quality of our data that companies like Netflix are willing to use our data in an internal way, but also public facing. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to Carolyn.
So we have 20 years on, what have we accomplished? Here's a whirlwind tour. Our film data goes back to 1934, and our TV data goes back to 1999. Our digital data goes back to 2007. And a big milestone for us was in 2011 when we were acquired by Variety, which gave us really increased our reach tremendously. The territories that we're tracking today include the US, UK, Canada, India, South Korea, Japan, and Brazil, and that's continuing to grow. This year was a big year for us because we started incorporating the EIDR unique project identifiers for easier data mapping, and we also completely redesigned our app. So what have we learned in all this time? Always listen to your clients. If you're solving their problems, you're solving your own problems because very few use cases are unique. Don't be afraid to get there first. What that has meant for us, you know, here are a few examples. One was, it's silly to say today because email alerts are so ubiquitous, but in 1999, nobody was doing that for breaking news like pilot pickups and series pickups and executive changes. So that was actually highly disruptive at the time to the print trade. In 2001, we became the first company to syndicate a report for US content that was being marketed overseas at the LA screenings. And the funniest one for me is that in 2007, this was about 5 years before House of Cards came out on Netflix, so the digital content space was very new. So we went in and we started tracking that, and then I had lunch with a prominent agent who was telling me about it, and he looked me in the eye and he said, you know what, you're wasting your time. No one's going to make money. So in any case, and then for data, the things that are really important apart from obviously, accuracy and consistency, but, formatting. So the way that we've evolved is from displaying our data, in our native platform to really formatting it so that it's optimal for somebody who's ingesting it as part of data. APIs are great, but not so great when they're not well documented. So that's been a huge priority for us over the past couple of years. And finally, don't assume that you know everything about how your product or your data is going to be used, because we get calls every day that are surprising about how people are using it.
Right. And many of our best developments actually have come out of clients reaching out to us and saying, hey, we'd really like to know the status of series renewing so that when we go into the LA screenings, we know what's in our budget. And so we came up with a series renewal report out of that and started tracking it very early on. So it's always that responsiveness has always been kind of core to the success of it. So our first use case is Netflix. Netflix has been a partner of ours for many years now. They've always loved the quality of our data around the US, UK, and Canada. They approached us about a year ago and essentially said, hey, we love the quality of this information, but we'd really like you to increase your scope globally, because that's what we're doing with our business. And so we ended up settling on four territories the seven territories you see here, but four territories that we added: Brazil, South Korea, Japan, and India. And what's interesting about this particular partnership is we were able to deliver comprehensive data sets within the span of 6 months, which are now available to the client and available to other clients as well. In addition to that, it was a deal that you don't do a lot of these, but I like to mention it. It's a perpetual data license. So when companies license data, data is licensed for a term. At the end of that term, you typically have to expunge data from your systems. That can be a real pain. You have to gate data. You need to make sure that you're able to remove it. Netflix said to us, look, we don't want to expunge data at the end of the term. We want to keep it. And in fact, we want to combine your data with first and third party data sets. And so, spoiler alert, it is a more expensive deal, but a lot of companies see value in doing perpetual licenses because it essentially allows them to hold onto the data. So that's one of the interesting aspects of this partnership.
Yeah, and so as Mark was saying, they're a global business, they're expanding globally by the minute. So for them, it was very important to understand who were the key players in those territories. Who did they need to be in business with? What are the most successful properties in film and TV that they needed to be aware of? So that's the focuses that we've been having. I think that's going to continue as we see more of the kind of streaming wars happening and where you expand. As Eric was saying in the last panel, the audience is the entire world, so that's what's going to be happening. For us as a data company, when you're tracking the English language territories, all of the formatting is kind of similar, but it's been a real education for us, particularly looking at names in Korean can maybe have 10 different translations into English, so that created its own problem. A lot of people in India apparently do not use last names, so as anyone who's dealt with duplications in their databases, you can imagine challenges on that. And then sometimes the same series will run just either completely year-round, so they don't have any kind of real structure around the seasonality, or there can be one season of a show that will run over multiple years. So these have been some of the problems that we've been solving. So it's been a really interesting learning curve.
Very interesting. And that example with actors, particularly with lesser-known actors,
yes,
you could translate so many different ways from Korean into English or Japanese into English. So it's been a learning curve, but something that has benefited us and the client. So our next use case is Warner Media. So Warner Media, we have many different companies within Warner Media that license data from us or use our business solutions. But in this example, we're talking about an inclusion study that we executed about 2 years ago for WarnerMedia. They came to us and said, listen, we want to do an analysis of gender and ethnic inclusion across all of our content. So that's anything produced or distributed by any WarnerMedia company. So you can imagine a huge undertaking. We delivered that. They're very pleased with the study. The next year they came back to us and said, we want you to do it again, and we want you to do it for all studios. So we executed that. As far as we know, it's the most comprehensive ethnic and gender study of its kind, and there were a lot of interesting takeaways.
Yeah, so the big question that people ask is, well, how do you determine someone's ethnicity? And so that was kind of the first thorny proposition. So whenever possible, we're looking at primary sources, like how do people self-identify, so that you're not looking at somebody like Chrissy Teigen and making an assumption. You know, in a worst case scenario, sometimes you do have to make your best faith guess in terms of if somebody's hiring them, how they're going to perceive that person, but in every possible case when we're doing that. You know, the good news for us, though, is that we're always capturing that information, so that's just part of our baseline data set, is gender, ethnicity, and attaching those to properties. So that was the good point that we came up with. But then in executing the study, you know, how do you define success and inclusion? That was tough, particularly when we didn't have year-over-year numbers, because that's the obvious thing, is how do you compare against the previous year. So what we wound up doing was looking at the U.S. Census data. So we said, well, okay, this ethnicity represents X percentage of the U.S. population. What percentage do they represent among actors that are, you know, guest star roles or main title cast in films, or people that are behind the screen as producers, directors, writers? And so that wound up being a very good benchmark for us.
And, you know, I'm sure what people want to know is, what was the conclusion of the study, though? How did the studios stack up?
You know, okay, gender parity, not a surprise, we're not there yet. Numbers in front of the camera tend to be better than behind the camera for ethnicity and inclusion, and, you know, for gender parity. But the main headline was that Latinx representation is disproportionately low. That was the most surprising thing. You know, at the time we did the study, I think the leaders were CBS Corporation and Lionsgate, actually. And everybody's kind of on a, I think, you know, on a trend of inclusion, I'm sorry, improvement. You know, WarnerMedia is the only major conglomerate I can think of that has announced kind of this initiative.
Right.
To improve it. So there are a lot of eyes on it.
They have a dedicated division within WarnerMedia that's all around inclusion. And so there's more funding going on for this type of research. Yeah.
I have a question about this. I remember looking at the original report, and it was very eye-opening. I mean, the numbers weren't that much of a shocker because we all kind of knew the state of the industry. But as you mentioned, the important thing is, are we improving? How's it trending? So are you planning to do an updated version of this every year, or
yes.
Like, how's that going to work?
Yeah, we'll do it every year. It's something that we do specifically for clients. It's an interesting question because being part of Variety, we initially thought, hey, this is something that we need to announce in the magazine. And we ran into such resistance just from all of the studios that really didn't want that result broadcast. And so we thought, hey, look, you know what? This is something that if somebody's going to license it and somebody wants to buy the study, then we'll supply it, but it's not something that we could actually promote. And it was really eye-opening, actually, kind of the response.
Yes.
So, but we will be doing it every year, but it has to actually be, you know, ordered by a client. Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions on inclusion before we move on? And we can always have questions at the end as well. Okay. So our next use case is from the Walt Disney Company. So about 2 years ago, we began discussions with Walt Disney Company, and it was really around Project Genome, Anthony Accardo's group. Is Anthony here? I didn't see him. Oh, great. Hi. Welcome. So Anthony and I started having conversations around supplying rich contextual entertainment metadata to help Power Genome. And for those of you that don't know Power Genome, and I want to just get this right, Project Genome uses data science to help content discovery and predictive analysis of performance. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Real time.
Yeah. Don't want to get that wrong. We also, at that same time, with Disney Plus beginning to come online, we were asked to supply digital images around every actor attached to a Disney property, a film, television series. Now, one of the really cool things about being part of Variety Media is we're part of Penske Media Corporation. And PMC owns 25 publications, Rolling Stone, Deadline, TV Line, Hollywood Live, Variety, etc. And so we have tremendous resources around digital images, and we have done tremendous work in terms of actually pulling all of those images into our system. And so one of the pain points for Disney Plus was we really want to be able to license images that we'll have the rights, and because we own all those images, we're able to kind of bestow those rights upon, you know, our clients. So that was one of the other pain points there.
Yeah, I'd say you know, internally one of the challenges was the merger. Thanks a lot. You know, expansion of the data set, which was fine, we were tracking it anyway, but and actually that will be an interesting thing calling back to the inclusion study, because that will kind of change the numbers a bit on that. And then the other challenge, you know, when you're delivering images, you know, obviously we have our own metadata around the projects and the people, but the images themselves have their own metadata, so providing that source information, the photographer information, just to make sure that that was buttoned up and that we were verifying that those were PMC-owned images.
Right, and a tremendous amount of work that goes into that as well, yeah. Our next use case is a small company you may have heard of, Facebook. They're one of our newest data licensing clients. A longer time to get there, but the partnership is one that we're really excited about. And so when Facebook approached us, they were interested in licensing all of our GDPR compliant data. That was very important to them. In fact, we have a comprehensive data on everybody working in entertainment, and that includes email addresses, phone numbers, and under GDPR, you have to be very careful with that data, obviously. And in fact, as part of this deal, Facebook essentially agreed to not take any emails or phone numbers around any of our contact information. But at any rate, when the client came to us, they said, look, we are interested in building pages that we own around actors, around content, film, television, streaming series, and we want to license that metadata and put it into a knowledge graph. And for those of you that don't know what a knowledge graph is a repository of all kinds of different information around people, projects, and Facebook has one of the most significant repositories of that information, and they wanted to essentially add our information to that.
Yeah, just to be clear, they wanted to create pages that they owned rather than the content producer or the talent
Right. Owning
that page. And then also, just to be clear, like, you know, the GDPR considerations with Facebook, those were a little more extreme, but, you know, that's something that when we do have data licensing clients, that's information that we are putting into separate files in any case, so that whoever the end user is can determine who downstream is going to have access to that, but it's not. Something that we kind of wall off a little bit.
Right.
Safety.
And the other sort of value point for Facebook is Facebook Watch, with all of this streaming and building out that streaming side of the business, all of our rich, what we call filmography information, those are the credits around writers, directors, actors, producers, and all the imagery around them. They wanted to be able to leverage that information. So that was also kind of a piece of that agreement. Our next example is McKinsey & Company, and McKinsey & Company has worked with us for many years. They're one of the major consulting firms, and we partnered with them because they were interested in measuring the overall volume of production across a five-year time frame across broadcast, cable, and streaming, and it was fascinating what came out of the study. I'm going to let you talk
back
about
to
how
me,
fascinating
Mark.
It was.
So the interesting thing with that was looking at, you know, we think of ourselves as being in this era of peak TV, which is absolutely true, but that doesn't really tell you, like, how are those hours positioned between broadcast and cable and digital. And so what we've been finding over the past couple of years, really, is that the streamers are really siphoning off a lot of talent and putting a lot of downward pressure on the cable providers, so particularly in the scripted realm. So we've seen those numbers for scripted cable development kind of start to go down, as well as the actual shows that make it to air. And then we were talking about one cable network that used to do scripted, no longer does. And somebody on my team was like, we haven't seen them roll out a new show in about 6 or 7 months. So I think those are the kinds of things that we're going to start to see, and as we get into the streaming wars again, it's my second time saying that, but it's just going to be more competitive for talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also did an analysis of commitment levels. So we're identifying what are the commitment levels that are most popular at various networks to give an idea of how many pilot commitments are being made, how many series orders are coming out of that, how many script plus penalty commitments. And that information is very valuable because then you identify, well, what should I really, am I negotiating, is my client negotiating at a level that they should? Are they getting sort of, what's the most common deal? Are we under the average commitment level? Are we over that commitment level? And so that was data that we're able to provide as well through that study.
At the broadcast networks now, they are starting to have to make larger upfront commitments, like put pilot commitments and make pilot even if they don't ultimately shoot it, or kind of series production commitments, just to remain competitive.
Right.
See the importance of those commitments.
I have a question on this particular case, if you don't mind. So why is it that you provided McKinsey with a dump of the data about the series, and then they analyzed it and transformed it into information, or you delivered the data already digested?
It was both. So we delivered a dump of data, and they wanted it in a pivot table so that we were able to, and then we did some analysis for them. So part of it was, they wanted the data. They needed to see, first of all, the hours of programming. So what we used was we leveraged runtime for all series. So we're able to take how many 30-minute series, how many 60-minute series, how many hour and 20-minute specials,
how many episodes,
and how many episodes of each of those.
And for that analysis, did you use a particular tool, or just people analyzing the information?
Yeah, no, we used our internal team. So we used our own internal resources to analyze that. And then as part of that service for the client, we actually got on the phone with them and just walked them through the data and did a whole presentation for their company to say, hey, here's our findings from the data. You may pull additional findings from it, but this is what we're seeing.
Right.
Now, we don't know how they wound up using that for their client.
Of course.
But
you don't have a specific business intelligence tool to digest the data.
No, not in this case.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you do have it. I mean, you said not in this case.
Yeah,
for this,
we have a number of analytical tools that we're using.
Okay.
But for a study like this, it's something that can be executed through Excel and pivot tables because it's a straight count.
Yeah, I think you're asking for a proprietary analytics platform.
Right.
With the licensing that
right.
We don't have, but that's going to be.
Any other questions on that? Okay. So our next use case is Pure Music. So Pure Music is one of the largest, or the largest independent music publisher in the world. And this really was the start of a whole new line of business for us. And so when we began speaking with Pure Music, they were very interested in identifying sync licensing opportunities. When you're a music publisher or a music library, the way you make money is essentially licensing music you own, songs you own, in order to sync with entertainment, film, television, etc. And their pain point was they needed to hear about those sync licensing opportunities around production earlier, as soon as possible. And that's one of our specialties, is identifying forward-looking information and when things are going into production.
Yes. So yeah, we have people on our staff, and that's all they're doing is making almost verified production dates. So that part was the relatively easy part, but the more challenging part is being ahead of when a music supervisor or music editor or composer gets attached to a series as a community production, because that's where the hiring, they're based in from the hiring managers for those jobs. So that's what we've been doing for them.
Okay, and we're getting to our last 5 minutes. I just see the sign, thank you. We wanted to just touch on briefly our 2020 product enhancements. So I mentioned VSCORE at the top of the presentation. VSCORE is our familiarity and appeal metric for about 30,000 actors. Feedback we've gotten from many of our clients is we love VSCORE around people. We would love a VSCORE around projects. And the reason that data is valuable is because it helps smart search. So when you're searching for titles and you have titles bubbling up, this can be one of the data points that essentially make sure people are getting what they want quickly. So identifying the most familiar titles to users using this data.
Yeah, and then the other one is a search engine for film comps. Film comps, if you're not familiar, is a predictive tool that studios and agencies will use to try to figure out, will this movie make money? And so right now, surprisingly, it's a highly manual process where they're pulling budgets and they're pulling casts. This is a perfect way for us to leverage our data just to help automate part of that project and help make more informed decisions.
A keyword enhancement. So we have lots of keywords, arenas, and tags. We're enhancing that so we can have even more detailed results. This is particularly for discovery engines, car crashes. I want to know about wedding crashers, what have you, having all of that attached. And those are major undertakings in terms of identifying those keywords.
So employment history doesn't sound too groundbreaking because I know you've heard of LinkedIn. But the benefits that we're planning to bring is we're curating that data so it isn't just the user-supplied voluntary data, and we're also marrying it to whatever their talent credits may be and or their executive credits, the projects that they've shepherded at various jobs.
And the last enhancement for 2020 is how am I connected to X? What we hear from a lot of our users is, oh, I'd really love to be able to look out how am I connected to a particular music editor, or how am I connected to a particular composer or director or associate producer. So we're able to identify those things and make it very easy for people to trace kind of the connections in order to get to the right person for a project, particularly projects in development. And then we can also identify who is most likely to be hired on projects based on past relationships. So that's another thing that we're mapping in 2020. And that's our presentation. Are there any questions that we can answer, or anything that we touched on? Yes?
Do we have time for a question?
We do have time. We have about 3 minutes.
Might be like a twofold question.
Yeah.
I'm parsing it. One is, if it's not proprietary information, where do you get like this gazillion amount of data?
That's a great question.
As well as, either helps in some cases, but how do you connect the data? Because I'm certain it's like from multiple sources.
Right. Well, the first part.
Do you have a bunch of people that do the connection, or do you have again a tool that helps you do the connection?
Carolyn, you want to take the where? How do we collect the data?
Yeah. So, it's as part of Variety, what's great is that does enhance our reach, so we have access to a lot of resources that way. But at the end of the day, it's kind of relationship driven. We are calling the buyers, networks and studios, and running their slates for them and making sure that we're up to date and verifying any information that we do get from a third-party source.
Right. And we automate as much as we can, but at the end of the day, it really is primary research. And so we have 30 media analysts who are in constant contact with the companies and the territories that we're tracking. We also have people on the ground in every territory that we're using. So that is a primary research. And the second part of your question was EITR?
Well, it was how do you connect the dispersed amount of data? I mean, I know EITR helps to some extent.
Yeah.
Standardization, but who else?
Yeah. So on our end, it's not a problem because it's all of our data. So we own everything within our database except something like ratings, for example, and then we do have to actually do data mapping, and that is, we have mapping tools that we've actually built, but in terms of EITR, we actually supply information to EITR to make EITR better. So because we have all that forward-looking data set, one thing that we're talking about right now and looks like we're moving forward with the actually passing development to EITR to create those unique IDs at the earliest point in the life cycle so that things are populated in advance, which will just help make EIDR better. So I hope that answers that.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
How much are you leveraging AI to do this type of work?
We're not really.
We're real.
Yeah. We're not. It's all
someday.
Real people right now, but we'd love to.
Yeah.
I was wondering for the next example, you're capturing languages, the names that aren't necessarily in Latin characters.
Right.
Are you also having basically track the Latin, the non-Latin original and sort of your transliterated version?
We're supplying the Romanized versions, but the people that we actually employ to do it, they kind of have to know the language, so that's usually in the back end, we're not passing that data.
So it's just like your the accepted version of the name.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Got one more.
Yeah.
Nona.
Hi.
Earlier you mentioned you track about 30,000 different companies as far as information. Are you also tracking ownership of those? Because as you know, our industry, you're buying and selling to every day. So is it, it's part of Fox, it's part of Disney, and there's some hierarchy?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah. We identify the vertical integration of all the companies so they all stack within each other. Yeah, that's a big piece of the work.
Cool.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you guys, we're out of time, but we're going to be downstairs. So if you have any other questions, please stop by and see us at the booth. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.